Good morning. My name is Jim Graham, and I'm Chair of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. The date is December the 13th, 2007. I hereby call this meeting to order. I note the presence of an abundant quorum, most definitely. I want to wish everybody a very happy holiday and a peaceful and safe time in the days ahead. The first order of business is to approve the agenda, and the agenda has been changed from what was circulated. Is there discussion on the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, could you go over with us how the agenda's been changed? Because that was a late night email.
Yes, it
maybe
was.
Maybe some of us haven't had a chance to catch up.
The under information items, the index fair policy is not on the agenda that is before you for approval.
Any particular reason for that being stricken?
Well, in all candor, I'd have to ask. I'd have to ask the staff as to why they removed it from the agenda.
We understand there was a request made by the chairman last night to remove that from the agenda.
I think there are various chairmen in this, well, in this panel, but I think you're referring to our distinguished board chair.
Yes, Mr. Graham. In talking with several of the board members, and I didn't realize that we hadn't talked to you on that issue, but it was an information item with that needed a whole lot of fine-tuning. It was, if you went all through that and saw the way it was tied to the double the seat, the index, it was a non, many folks felt it was non-workable, needed refining. It was information item, and it could come back as long as there were some, when we deal with the fairs, as long as there was some discussion of it as we discuss fairs, some discussion of the policy as we discuss fairs. But I think it was a little bit premature, and I do apologize.
Well, typically, and I think under the bylaws, actually, under the rules, the chair of the particular committee is consulted. I think it says that the chair sets the agenda.
And that's accurate, and I do apologize for that.
So this is not quite the way we want to do things in the future, but it was happened here, and it was an information item, which, you know, puts in a little bit different class.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That's the answer to your question. Okay. Is there further discussion on the agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved. Now we have three sets of minutes. Oh, there you are.
I have no changes to
that. Oh, okay. So,
way to go, team.
So is there a motion to adopt the three sets of minutes as if read? Mm-hmm. It's been moved. Is there a second? It's moved and seconded. Discussion. Hearing none, the minutes of September. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The minutes for September 13th, September 27th, and October the 11th, all 2007, are hereby approved. So that moves us to our first action item, which is to receive public hearing staff report on fare and parking increase, and then to act on the fare proposal. I do want to acknowledge that our distinguished general manager is not with us today for understandable reasons, and we do have Mr. Francis, who is with us, who will be presenting this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Members of the committee, we have, as Mr. Graham stated, three action items. As you know, six public hearings were held on the proposal between November the 13th and the 15th. Two hearings were held in Virginia, two were held in the District of Columbia, and two were held in Maryland. Staff has presented a presentation to be presented by Mr. Chuck Woodruff to discuss the comments from these proceedings.
Thank you, Joe. This is on page 40 of the package. There's great detail in the package. This is a summary of the public hearing process. As Gerald mentioned, there were six public hearings, two in each jurisdiction. We also received comment via email, written correspondence, total of 422 folks, 150 of which we actually heard from at the public hearings. A breakdown by jurisdiction of those folks that did provide comment. And this is important data, the summary of the responses to the fare increase. You see the largest percentage, 47%, indicated that the increase proposed was too high, followed by service doesn't merit the increase, people will abandon Metro. You can see others, and then there's a second part of this chart.
Mr. Chairman, before we leave that slide, you wouldn't mind going back. The prognostication on the part of people at the public hearings that people will abandon Metro, I just wanted to share with colleagues some information that was shared at the last meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. And if you look, these are the summary between FY 06 and 07 of our weekly ridership by the stations in Virginia. And what it shows is during that year, we saw ridership decline at 12 of the 20 Metro Rail stations in Virginia, including 4 of the 5 in Fairfax County. Basically, every end-of-the-line station in Fairfax saw ridership drop, with the biggest decline being in the part of the county I represent. So what's being looked here is what might be the effect of a fare increase. Frankly, people have already started voting with their feet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. And I may have missed this because I needed to consult with my colleague from the District of Columbia. But how many individuals does this represent?
This represents the 422 that we received comment from.
And each and every one of them responded to this question?
No, I'm sure not each and every one of them.
Right. So how many? The percentages are, of course, always interesting and sometimes informative. But what are the raw numbers of people we're talking about?
Well, obviously we have that data.
It's 431,000. It doesn't give us IP.
Well, we're talking about
page 36.
Right. I'm talking about this bar graph. Is this the ridership survey, or is this the public comment on
this
the fare proposal?
This is the public comment, Mr. Grammon, on page 36.
Page 36 of what?
Of this presentation of your board package.
Testimony.
Page 36. Page 35. Page 36.
So, for example, people will abandon Metro. That represents 111 folks that made that comment.
Right. And I think, you know, I think we've all had great experience with polls and surveys and opinion and so on, you know, but I think it's, you know, you're not presenting this as scientifically accurate data, are you? That has been the subject of a polling company and et cetera, et cetera.
This is what we received
from the testimony, and we just did the mathematics to come up with
this,
percentages.
This is what it is, which is 111 people responding who were involved in the public comment period on the fare increase. Am I right?
You're right.
Okay. Just, I think it's very, very useful that this doesn't get extrapolated. There's so many intelligent people at this table, all of whom want to talk. But I that this doesn't get extrapolated into, you know, 26% of people will abandon Metro. I think you get my point.
I think, Mr. Grant, I think the point is well made relative to the comment to the number of people who participated. Have you looked at the participation relative to ridership? If we looked at our average daily ridership, the 422 people represent what?
Well, we move up 1.2 million riders on an average weekday, so 422 on a basis of 1.2 million is a very small number.
And I think the relative piece is that all of our comments are relative to participation levels, so we're not making them exact science relative to the number that participated here or the number of riderships or the number of comments. Is that the point?
True.
Mr. Linton, I saw your hand up earlier.
I still have, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say that I understand the chair's point, but I think Mr. Kaufman actually gave us facts. This was not exactly what someone said at a hearing. This is actually data that suggests what's actually going on now. So I think that's fairly concrete. The other thing I would suggest is, unfortunately, the informational item that was taken off the agenda today dealt with indexing. However, we've talked about a fair policy. When you talk about a fair policy, that goes way beyond indexing. One of the things that you need to do in order to examine a fair policy is an elasticity study, which we have not done. If, in fact, you did an elasticity study, you would have a better sense of what the abandonment rate would, in fact, be as a result of all of these changes that are being proposed today. So we don't have an exact science, and quite frankly, we have chose to be shooting in the dark in the proposal that we're doing right now. So I think, all of that should be put in some context.
Thank you very much, Mr. Linton. Did I see another hand?
Mr. Graham?
Oops, Mr. Benjamin.
I'd just like to comment on the public hearing process because we're not taking it quite as seriously as I think we should be. We go out to public hearing to hear what people have to say about a proposal that we have made. Over 400 people came back and told us what they thought, which is a very high number for people that have got to go to a certain amount of trouble to come out and tell us what they think. I think it's important for us to listen to what they said and to make that part of what we do, not try and say it isn't part of a survey. This was our process. This was our attempt to reach out to our public. They did respond, and they overwhelmingly said, you're being unfair to the long-distance rider, you're being unfair to the parker, you're increasing the fees for those people way too high, and they break out actually into two or three little categories here, but if you add them all up, it's the vast majority of the people who actually testified.
Mr. Bonamay?
Sure, thank you. I think these points are well made, but I think for me the one that does resonate, and I heard this from our attendees of the public hearing, is that service was really at the bottom line here. All we heard over and over was, if you want this increase, deliver the service. And I think this evening's opinion, this poll bears it out. I think that the takeaway here is people are willing to pay for service if they're getting the service they expect. And I think that's the point that I think this board is prepared to drill into the board staff and all everybody that works in the authorities, that service has to be there or else we're going to be in a difficult position to kind of justify any increase going forward. So for me, the takeaway was, what do we do about service? Let's handle the business that's before us now, but the focus for the next year, maybe 3 years, is how do we get this to be the best ride in America that John has to say.
I think we're back to your presentation.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I want to just comment because I was with Mr. Benjamin, Mr. Linton, and Mr. Monomay in the public hearings. And what Mr. Monomay said is exactly true, and that's what we took away. Our customers told us that they want better service. And I just wanted to let the committee know that we heard that. We have already started on efforts to improve our service, and we will continue to work toward making this the nation's best ride. So we heard them loud and clear. I've had discussions with Mr. Linton and Mr. Benjamin after the one that we had and Ms. Hewlett too, and she was there.
I was there too. Oh.
And well, I just want to let you know that we heard our customers loud and clear. We are addressing any all matters from an operational standpoint.
Shall we proceed?
Yes.
Continuing with this chart, next slide, please. This is a continuation again of the percentages of those folks that contacted us, the 422, Nearly 15% indicated they understood the need for the increase, 14% unfair to peak riders, unfair to middle and low income, 13, and then you see the percentages coming down to the final one, 3.6% said the metered parking proposal was too high. A summary of what the board approved to send to public hearing, the highlights would be that this proposal, if approved at the maximum level, would increase the rail boarding charge by 30 cents. There are a modest increase in the different tiers, the distance tiers. The peak fare would go up by as much as 80 cents, and parking could be increased by as much as $1.15. No proposed changes to the off-peak rail fares. And in calculating the need for the $109 million, we've discussed this previously, the assumption was that the jurisdictional subsidy would go up 6.5%, which would generate $33 million. We did have a few folks comment that if we were to go to a flat fare on rail, just a one flat fare, and again, this is just a mathematical computation, revenue generated number of trips, that works out to $2.50. That's with no discounts. That is just a mathematical calculation, which if the board wanted to pursue that further, we would certainly need to study that greater, but that is an order of magnitude of what a flat fare would be on the rail in fiscal 09. On the bus side, what was sent to public hearing proposed up to 10 cents increase on cash boarding charge, no increase if the customer's using the Smart Trip, and then after a year, there would be no discounts on the transfers, either rail to bus or bus to bus, only if you use the Smart Trip card would the transfer be valid, and there are no proposed changes to the Metro Access fares. At this point, the staff is recommending to the board that they approve a fare increase to generate $109 million in additional revenue, which is what's needed to balance the fiscal 09 budget.
Okay, there we yes, Mr. Francis. Oh,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Mr. Cato prepared a statement that he wanted me to read to the committee.
Do we have it in front of us?
No, you don't.
Okay, so.
Since I arrived as a general manager in January, I've been taking a long, hard look at the authority and its operation. I've looked at the costs, the expenses, manpower, and infrastructure, and with my 30 years' experience in transit, I've come to one inescapable conclusion. Metro needs a fare increase in FY09. This isn't a subject for debate. This is a cold, hard fact. We've shown you our projections and made our case. We cut our expenses in FY08 by $34 million, and we're constantly looking for more ways to improve efficiency. Right here, right now, though, we need $109 million to balance the budget in FY09. If we don't get those funds, there's only one option. We cut service, and nobody wants to see that, especially not our customers. You brought me here to do a job and to make Metro America's best transit agency. To do my job, we need to have sufficient and stable revenues to meet unavoidable operating costs, increases such as the key areas of energy, labor, and health. And I should always note that this fare increase only deals with the operating side of the budget. We still have a major task ahead of us in the areas of capital reinvestment and rehabilitation, which are keys to improving our service reliability. I know I'm asking you to make a hard decision, but as the weeks go by, it won't get any easier. Every week that passes only adds to the size of the fare increase. The board will have to approve sooner or later. The clock is ticking, and it has been since we started in September. It's been a long and difficult process, but we can't leave this job undone. You've just heard our report on the public hearings, a report that is unvarnished. I attended three of those hearings along with my deputy general manager and my chief of staff. We heard what the customers are saying loud and clear, and I have rededicated myself and my entire staff to addressing the customers' concerns. We're making changes every day. Some you see, some you don't, but it's happening as we speak. If we want to be the best transit agency in the nation, we can't underfund operations now. This increase isn't a luxury, it's a necessity. The proposed structure may not be perfect, but it is what the board put forward for public input. If what you adopt generates somewhat lesser revenues, that needs to be weighed against the options of doing nothing and then face even more difficult decisions next year, both in terms of fare increases and service reductions. The latter, service reductions, should not be an option considering that we are in the very business of providing more service and enhancing regional mobility. That is all you have to work with at this point, and I urge you to adopt a reasonable proposal within the parameters of what was advertised.
Thank you very much, Mr. Francis. This is an action item. So in order to maintain maximum clarity on what we're doing, I'm going to move approval of the proposal that was submitted to the public for comment. It will then be open for amendments or discussion. So I move approval of the proposal that was submitted to the public for comment. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion is now on the motion. Mr. Kaufman.
I move to substitute, Mr. Chairman. And I shared this with colleagues yesterday afternoon. And my concern is basically this. I recognize, I share Mr. Cato's concern that we must have a fair increase and we need it sooner rather than later. My concern is while we're sitting about wondering whether or not it's going to snow on Saturday, various proposals I've seen floating around have caused 6 inches of assumptions to accumulate on the ground already and more are piling on. Having worked with our county staff, wish to put forward is an interim increase that would basically try to, using the roughly 8% increase for base bus or people paying cash for bus as the base, and then adjust the other increases to be roughly in line with that 8%. The only one that frankly is out of that alignment is a 13.3% increase for parking. This proposal for the first 6 months of next year, January through the end of June, would bring to the authority an additional $15 million we don't have today. And then, frankly, if you look at our normal schedule, this is the board meeting when traditionally we get that first peek at the general manager's budget for the next fiscal year. So we're right in the normal cycle. This is an increase in advance of that normal cycle. This gives us the opportunity to work with staff to pin down some of these assumptions, to look for additional cuts, to ensure that we can, again, if we have to do a second round of fare increases after this first one I'm proposing, then we have it on a sound basis. We have those numbers more pinned down. And while it may be painful for my colleagues around the table to have to once again go out to our riders, I think we'll do it from a more solid base rather than pegged to so many assumptions. So again, Mr. Chairman, I move this as an alternative to the motion.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Mr. Benjamin.
I think this is an interesting and very positive move in the direction of trying to minimize the size of the fare increase. And I appreciate the fact that it certainly will help the long-distance rider and the person who's parking, and those are the people that I think came back to us and said that our previous proposal was insufficient. I go back to the words of the general manager that were just read, in which he very specifically said that we do need to start now to generate the revenue that we are going to need in fiscal 09. And Mr. Kaufman, as much as I agree with many of the things you've said, one of the things you did note is that this will not generate revenue at anywhere near the level that we need in the first 6 months without a very hefty increase that would then occur probably in July. And I just can't see us going back after this last set of hearings and being told that the increase is way too high with another set of hearings, which we would have to hold in the spring, which would ask for an even greater increase, which is what would be required by this package. So as much as I appreciate the ability to give us some more time to breathe and focus on this a little bit better, I, for one, would not want to be part of a process that asks our public for an even larger increase than we have already.
Mr. Linton, Ms. Hutchinson.
It's very tough. I mean, I actually think that I have to commend my colleague, Mr. Kaufman, for a rational approach to try to take into consideration impacts on customers and policy, giving us a chance to really have a rational process moving forward. Unfortunately, what we're doing today is not very rational. It's an effort to fill a gap in the budget, but it doesn't really look at all the impacts of the region nor the riders. Let me ask you, what would, and I clearly understand Mr. Benjamin's point, but I'd like to have a little more data. I'd like to know exactly what does that mean in terms of if we were to move this proposal forward, what in fact would be the gap that would be created in our proposed budget? And second point would be, if we were to go through June and had that gap, what would have to be the size of a potential fare increase in the second round if we were to pursue that? Are those numbers available, or you guys get the back of your envelope, or have you looked at this with enough time to be able to do that?
Mr. Chairman, since this came from the pen of county staff, and me, it might be a little, I will maybe offer some suggestions, and staff could tell me if I'm way off base, because they frankly are just seeing this, and they got it at the same time you all did. They may or may not be able to answer it, but I'll start. The key thing is we're talking about identified $109 million gap and a proposed 18-month solution. I'm looking at the first 6 months of those 18 months, and this solution, admittedly, only puts on the table some $15 million. If you did a one-third for each of those 6 months, then it really should be something more on the order of magnitude of $35 million to hit that time. But also, as I look at some of the assumptions being discussed, there's some assumptions that certain aspects of revenue, gained revenue under this proposal, haven't been thrown into the equation. Certain more pessimistic assumptions haven't been put into it. But I'll be the first to admit, could this put us in a position that we have to look at a steeper increase come July? Yes, it probably will. But again, it will be predicated on a more thorough review. There will be less assumptions. And I think Mr. Monome hit the key assumption. We have to ask about what our objective is here. Is it mobility? Is it reliability? Or trying to rely on our customers to keep our subsidies down? When the day is done, we need to look at something immediate. I agree, but it needs to be something fair in that immediate run. The fundamental proposal that was initially put on the table is unfair to a large chunk of our ridership, chunk of our ridership that's already walking from the system. This is trying to introduce some balance. Give us some time to debate it, and when the day is done, will we have to be honest with our riders and look at a steeper increase? Maybe so.
Ms. Yearlett?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank Mr. Kaufman, too, for this proposal. Clearly, it's very well thought out, very detailed. And what it says to me, Mr. Kaufman, is that you clearly heard our customers. We saw the presentation, and all of us were at these public hearings, and people were very energized as they gave their testimony. And people really are upset about fare increases, and understandably so. I went to the one in Montgomery County as well as in Prince George's County, and what I have to dovetail on what Mr. Monome said, people aren't energized about a fare increase, period. But they can. It's more palatable if the service increases, if the service is much better. And I took copious notes at these meetings, and some of the things that people requested are minor changes that can be done and don't cost money, and some of them, you know, will cost some money. But I do think that if we work on our end, and I know we're committed to do that, and I know the general manager is committed to do that, as evidenced by what he's done thus far, and reinforced by his statement today. I think once we keep on the right track in terms of improving service, it'll be much better in terms of the fare increase. It'll be more palatable, at least. And while I think this is very, very good, and I think you're trying to be fair to our customers, and they do indeed come first, we don't have this luxury right now. We unfortunately, the situation we find ourselves in is grave right now. It really is. And we have to, I think, I know that there's some other proposals. I think we have taken the original proposal and tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it and tried to come up with something that's fair, but it is going to hurt. But we're trying to come up with something that's a little bit more equitable, but will generate more money and not result in another fare increase immediately thereafter.
Thank you. I think there's another piece that we're missing here. I think Mr. Kaufman's proposal at least moves us into looking at fare increase in the process that we would normally look at. It brings us into the budget cycle. It also, if we put this against what is originally on the table in the motion, is that the total lack of clarity and the lack of equity. And so we're starting off on a missed foot. We're starting off by not saying exactly what should have gone to public hearing that would allow us to come up with a discussion that could give us the best proposal. I think Mr. Kaufman is not saying that this one is an ideal proposal, but it does get us into the budget cycle to make the decisions that we have to make. We don't have the luxury to not do one or the other, start all over, or do the best that we can on a failed, imperfect proposal. So I think this is a good start. If we can't get here, I think we're back to the drawing board, and we need to recognize the severity of what that means to the overall agency and the needs. I want to point out the lack of clarity as to where we are with the proposal. We heard that customers were dissatisfied with service. You cannot ask people to pay more if they're unhappy with what you're trying to sell them. And I think that almost puts us back to the drawing board. We need to sell the proposal, whatever it is that we have in front of us. And I don't know if $15 million will help give us a start at this, but at least we're not going deep into their pockets without coming back. I think what we come back after the budget piece is to make clear what it is that they're going to gain and what that portion that they will pay for, and the equity. There is an equity in the base proposal, and I think we cannot have equity just to the customers. It has to be on those who have to share that cost. That is, you can't say that bus riders are the only ones that can be given a free ride. That has to be shared by everybody else there. So I think we should start out on the right foot here, at least by starting with either the partial proposal or going back to the drawing board.
Mr. Monahan. Mr. Sherman, thank you. And I'm going to indulge a little bit. I think that I appreciate Mr. Kaufman's proposal. I think it does it definitely makes an attempt to force this board to go back and even staff to go back and kind of rethink what we're about to do. But while I've certainly been here far shorter on the board than many of the people, both on the board and in this room, the things I do know about this authority as it relates to fares is that it's a pretty long history that we've been dealing with. We've been kicking around the notion of fares, and we've struggled as a board to make decisions about fares historically. I know that even in the years between the last fare increase and this fare increase, there have been numerous management initiatives to ratchet down costs and to improve the way we do business. And I think what the general manager, what I've heard clearly, is that he's done the same analysis that I think the previous general manager and the general manager before him is to look through every closet, every drawer for efficiencies and savings to make sure that we're not asking for more of our riders than we should. I think the base is that it takes more to run this system than we think it does currently today. That's bottom line. The question is, does that number get bigger over the course of a year, or do we take aggressive action now? And I'll just share from my experiences. I do ride between two metro stations. I'm starting to see some of the improvements. I'm seeing stations that are clean, stations that are brighter. We certainly have discussions about reliability and service, but I see improvements. But the thing is, those things cost money. As an operator of service, those things cost money. I know that it does every day. I do the same kind of analysis that our general manager, our deputy general manager, do every day. And so for us to wait and to rethink what I think we've been rethinking for 5 years, frankly, it's doing a disservice to the people that just want the service. We need to move forward in a progressive way to get to the business of making the service perform better.
Is there someone, this is still first round, is there somebody on first round on the motion who hasn't spoken? And then we'll go to second round, Mr. Linton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think there's a big fear here that we have a budget gap that we need to close, and that we have a proposal in front of us that will allow us to do that. Unfortunately, though, we're not looking at the long term. What we are doing here is creating an inequity in our fare structure that we will continue to build on. It becomes the foundation. We won't go back and change that fare structure to undo this. We will continue to try to nip at the edges and build on it. So you're building in the base and inequity that will continue throughout this region. And yes, I know nobody wants to go back because we've gone down this road. We've made this commitment. We have a fare policy on the docket today that we feel the need to vote for. So we always think short term. But the problem is that we are building in inequities is with an irrational fare structure that we're putting out because it closed a gap. I mean, the idea here was that it was politically something we could get out to have a public hearing on, and it closes a budget gap. So that's what we have here. Let me give you an example since Mr. Monomay talked about his ride this morning. I drove here this morning. Normally, I take the train. I dropped my daughter off. My daughter works in Silver Springs. And she said to me, she said, you know, Dad, I'm looking at this fare increase. She said, I can park at the parking garage at my office $4 a day. Now, if I go to the Glenmont station now and pay for parking, in addition to paying for the metro system, it takes me longer to get to work, recognizing that, you know, time value of money. I'm now starting to make some choices. I know how you fought for trains all these years, but I have to make some pocketbook decisions here. It's going to be irrational for me to pay for parking at the garage, at the metro garage, pay for the trip in, and it's less expensive for me to go and park it right next to my office. That's the kind of decision that we're having people make. We had a woman at our hearing, a district employee, had three children, and her children sat through the entire hearing. And I can visualize her right now. And she said, you know, I'm sitting here today, I brought my children here, and they're sitting through this whole hearing because look at my situation. You're asking to increase reserve parking at the Glenmont Garage. But right now, I have to drop my children off at the bus stop. In order to do that, I have to drive, okay? So I have to drop them off at the bus stop, get to the Glenmont Garage. Well, the reserved parking spaces are reserved from 8 to 10. I have to get to work at 9 o'clock. So I can't afford to pay for a reserved parking space, but now you want to expand the reserved parking space. So then I would have to go down to the Wheaton Garage. Well, if I go down to the Wheaton Garage, I'm going to be late. Well, if I'm late at the district for 15 minutes, I'm going to be charged an hour of leave time. Well, I have three kids, and when they get sick, I need the leave time. I'm a single parent. Those are real-life situations. Those are the people that we say we are protecting by only increasing the bus by 10 cents. But there are many other people who are disadvantaged, use rail, use parking, and we have not done the kind of analysis to understand the impact of that on the region. Yet we're going to force this through today because we want to try to fill the gap. I think it's wrong-headed for the wrong reasons. So we can do what we do, but that's the direction that we're going.
Mr. Kaufman, this will be your third time, so let me just, we're in second round at the moment. So is there further anyone who hasn't spoken or anyone who wishes to speak on second round? Okay, third round, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the way you're handling the committee. Two parts. First part, in looking at the proposal as I put it forward, I'd like to ask Mr. Harkham or whomever best on staff can reply. Assuming that this proposal if passed brings an additional $15 million into the budget that's not there for the existing fiscal year, would that additional dollar on the table enable us to avoid the type of draconian cuts in service Mr. Cato's statement alluded to?
No, I don't believe so. This, the modified proposal that I think we're talking about would generate $15 million per six-month period. So over an 18-month period, there's a $35 million revenue generation against a gap of $109 million. So there's still a shortfall of $64 million.
Through those, I'm looking, though, again, Mr. Harkin, this is not assuming that'll be all we'll get for that 18-month period, because 109 calls covers an 18-month period.
Correct.
I'm looking at that initial 6 months between January 1 of 08 and June 30 of 08. Would having an additional $15 million on the table enable us to avoid those cuts?
Yes, sir, through that period of time.
Okay. That's the main point I wanted to make. The second thing, Mr. Chairman, is going back, piggybacking to the concerns raised by my colleague. If you look at the proposal that's on the base proposal, that represents a 10-to-1 difference in terms of the increase. The long-haul suburban rider is looking at 10 times the increase that the short-haul bus rider will be facing. That isn't the result of analysis. That's the result of the political maneuvering that got us to that proposal. That's reality. That's the part of the process that gets us here. But so much of that initial emphasis was predicated on economic and welfare discussions, and if I look at staff summary again, going back to what we heard from our riders, and so much of what I hope this discussion is what we heard from our riders, and on page 24 of 129, when we look at the equity for lower and middle income riders issues, I read from the staff report, many of them stated that the idea that suburban riders had higher incomes was false. These riders said they moved to outlying areas because they couldn't afford to live in the District of Columbia. Additionally, there were some riders who traveled long distances from the district to jobs in the suburbs, and they felt the proposal hurt them as well. So I just want to bring us back to the equity issue. My proposal addresses, gives us time to further address that issue, and also gives us enough income on the table, enough revenue, that we avoid the type of crisis the general manager alluded to in his statement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. Let me just make a very brief comment. I'm not going to be able to support this proposal today, although I recognize its intention, and I recognize what motivates you to do this, and I respect that. We recognize also that the proposal that was submitted to public comment is probably not going to have the support of this board for one reason or another. There is a proposal which the Maryland representatives, some of the Maryland representatives, I don't know whether all of them, but at least the principal Maryland representatives have been working on, which we have, I think, all been consulted on to some extent or another. And I think I would be more inclined to support the compromise that is to be found in the Maryland proposal, which would permit us to go forward with this fare increase with a little bit more of a sense of consensus, a little bit more of a sense that everyone is leaving the table with something, and rather than doing a six-month kind of approach which is being suggested, although I have enormous appreciation for where you're coming from on this, Mr. Kaufman, and I know you're extremely well motivated, but I'm not going to be able to vote in favor of this. Is there further discussion? Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the substitute motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The nays or the noes have it, and the substitute is not adopted. Mr. Benjamin.
I'd like to amend the motion with a substitute, the one that you just referred to. In doing so, I would like to indicate that I very much appreciate almost all the sentiments that Mr. Kaufman put before us, the only exception being the one about having to go back to hearing a second time and have an even larger fare increase. But I think his motivation and his caring about doing this process properly is very, very critical. I very much support that, and I appreciate that he put the issues in front of us for us to discuss. The Maryland proposal you have all seen, you should have a copy of it in front of you. I'll very briefly go through it just to summarize the key points of it, but let me note that it does try to move in the direction that Mr. Kaufman's proposal did while still retaining an 18-month increase that we could implement right now, with one exception, where there is a potential for a step change. If you look at the proposal that is before you, it would increase the boarding charge the same amount as what, I'm sorry.
Kaufman, I'm trying to find it.
It's actually in the material. It's Maryland Alternative Attachment.
Yeah, don't look at the text. There's actually a table. I'm not sure that the text is correct.
Let's all get on the same page.
There's a table. I understand staff did put it in.
Is this it?
That looks like a table.
No, that's Fairfax County.
No, that's in Maryland.
That's in Fairfax County.
It says New Maryland proposal in the right-hand column.
Is it
yes, okay, I'm sorry.
Is it in the binder?
I apologize, I have it. Thank you, Mr.
Well, let me make sure I have it.
I believe staff put it in the binder.
It looks like this. The column heading says New Maryland proposal.
It's three pages after page 45.
After page what?
45. After page 45, the third page.
Well, let's all just get,
thank you,
get clear here. Okay, we are in the presentation.
Right. Yeah. Mr. Ewell points out that the Fairfax County proposal also has this one on it. So you can follow on either one of the two.
Okay.
Well, which one?
I would go with this one.
Let's be clear.
You know what?
Okay, let's be clear, because can we have copies of what we're doing here? Oh, here it is. Okay, here are the sheets. Does everyone have this long sheet?
That's the Fairfax County one.
But it's in there. You can circle it.
Yeah.
You mean this is the only proposal that we have is
no. There is another one, but
there is a Maryland proposal.
Staff, do you have extra copies of this proposal that you can hand out to the board members just because not everybody seems to
be able to do it? Let's make sure. I'm doing it. Where's my gavel? Okay. I want everyone to have this sheet of paper in front of me. Everyone should have this. Yeah. We're not going to do it that way. Okay. So we have. Does everyone have the document in front of them?
Okay. If you don't, a copy is coming around right now. Okay, everyone should have it.
All right, everyone has the document. Okay, now the new Maryland proposal, Mr. Benjamin.
If you look at this package, what you see is the current fare in the first column, what went to public hearing in the second column, the proposal which we're making in the third column. And as I said before, what we're trying to do is move in the direction that Mr. Kaufman talked about, but do it within the context of only a single public hearing, which we've already held, and a single fare increase, which would occur now and carry us for 18 months. Just the major thing, the Metro Rail fares, one of the major comments that we got was that parking was too high, that the long distance rider paid too much, and that this was unfair to all of those people. This does leave the boarding charge at 30 cents. It reduces the first and second tier, which are the next two lines, by 1 cent compared to what went to public hearing. So the burden as you go longer and longer distances does not increase as much, though it does increase. It reduces the max fare from 470, which went to public hearing, to 450. So the long distance rider would only pay 450, not 470, as we proposed in public hearing, and is the base that we have been talking about. It makes no changes from there all the way down to where you get to parking fees. This proposal generates $109 million if parking fees go up by a dollar. At the present time, we are seeing trends in rail ridership which are sufficiently high that appears that we will have a $5 million savings or an additional $5 million generated just because of base ridership increases. If that is in fact the case, we can afford to go down to 75 cents for rail parking. We don't know whether those trends will continue, and so our suggestion is we at this point set it at 75 cents because that appears to be appropriate. Review it at the time that we approve our budget, approximately 6 months from now, and if we are not generating sufficient revenues or have not cut costs sufficiently in a base budget to cover that $5 million, we would then increase it to a dollar, another 25 cents. We would increase the monthly reserve parking fee by $10, but not increase the number of spaces. This program is one in which many, many people who are coming in, and as Mr. Linton pointed out, we've gotten substantial testimony about, are not able to park during the peak period, when in fact we have the highest fares and get the highest revenue. And those people then are deprived of parking spaces until 10 o'clock. If they come then, they are then getting off-peak, we're getting off-peak revenue. So it's not clear that by increasing the number of spaces, we might not actually decrease revenue rather than increase. Therefore, if this just proposes increasing the revenue through the increase in the reserve parking fee, but not increase the number of spaces. The next change is the extending non-metro parking fees to all metro rail stations. We already have a problem with infrequent riders that they very often do not buy their smart trip cards until they exit the system and are going out to parking, or worse yet, actually get into the parking lot and can't exit the parking lot. We're trying to solve that by putting in credit card readers so that people can pay when they leave. This one would require everybody to buy their smart trip card going in and know that that's what they have to do, which we've been trying to educate people to do, but we know that that doesn't work, because otherwise you wouldn't know that the system wouldn't know that you had ridden the system, so that you would be charged the extra fee for parking. We don't have a problem at any sites other than the ones where we currently have a higher fee. Therefore, there doesn't seem to be any obvious reason why we would go ahead and do that. The next line on eliminating the $25 Redskins game day fee at Morgan Boulevard and Largo, we put that $25 in order to reserve that parking for Metro riders. If we don't do that, those lots will be filled up by people who drive and go to the game as opposed to people who drive and ride Metro. And so it was very specifically for that reason that that fee was put in order to continue to make those parking spaces available for Metro riders, we are proposing that not be included. So the Maryland proposal has those changes from what went to public hearing. And I now move that proposal as a substitute proposal.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Discussion on the substitution. Discussion on the substitution. Mr. Coffman.
Well, I appreciate very much what Mr. Benjamin has brought to the table, both as an insider for many years, and also now as a person who's getting to experience the squeeze of trying to cobble something together. And I appreciate the yeoman's work on his first budget to do it. My concern with what has basically become the D.C., Maryland, almost their merged proposal, if I can call it that, is that both depend far too greatly on steadily increasing number of long-distance commuters who park. The assumption is that we're going to continue to see that number grow. And my first comment today was sharing with folks the actual numbers we've seen, FY06 to 07. And that's not that we're seeing an increase in folks parking and riding. We're seeing in advance of this fare increase, people giving up on us. Also, if they continue to leave in greater numbers, and I look at this here, I look at the Maryland proposal. I appreciate the adjustment to lower the mileage fee increase. I appreciate the effort to lower the parking increase. But the only thing I see increasing here is the game day parking, but somehow we still get to $109 million because we're being even more optimistic in our assumptions than I believe staff was out of the gate. I've seen two big lowers, one teeny increase for game days of Redskin games, and that's it. So, you know, never mind the fairness argument that I began with and frankly lost. What about the revenue gap? If we're assuming this loss of revenue, and frankly, if we continue to see the loss of riders at $10 per customer per day with the long-haul rider, this effort, while we're advancing it, is a way to bridge the revenue gap as opposed to, you know, Kaufman's short-term prayer. We're not going to get there. If our riders respond as frankly they have already responded by walking away from the metro system.
Ms. Hutchins?
First of all, I have to say I respect your numbers, but I think we all need to have the same balance in understanding where the numbers come from. And I think, secondly, if we go to the inequity is talking about whether or not we're building a regional system and building that system so that there is equity throughout. And I just don't see how we're going to move away from the basis that we make our increase on, starting with this proposal, and go forward in the future. We started this, Mr. Monley says, 5 years ago, but it's been at least a consistent discussion with the new general manager and prior to figure out a way to come up with a consistent proposal that we and the riders can depend upon. Well, we're already going to riders and saying, this is what they want. We're looking at across the region, looking at only one portion of the region, and that is those that travel the long distance. And if we start out with a proposal that builds in that inequity, we not only have the challenge of whether or not we can consistently rely upon the ridership to generate the revenue, but we also are breaking down the system. We're changing the way the system has developed over the years and recognizing that if there are inequities within any portion, we need to work across the board to deal with those inequities, not simply shift them from one to the other. So I think we're looking at, and I don't know if the numbers that Mr. Kaufman and those of us from NVTC looked at are consistent in the decline, but the good news is that we've had an interest and a response to demand of the metro system. Are we going to be able to rely upon that demand by putting in place a proposal that the users see are not equitable in terms of serving them, and a system that is constantly being concerned about the delays, the response of services to our needs? My ride gets longer and longer as we sit in stations to move forward. We aren't doing this for a social being. We're doing it because we really rely upon it as an alternative to transportation. And that's where I think there's a failure. I would rather see us start over than to start on the wrong foot.
Let me just ask a question of staff, if I may. Mr. Francis, have you had the opportunity to look at the Maryland, what's called the New Maryland proposal?
I believe we have,
yes.
Are the projections, revenue ridership projections, upon which this proposal is based, are they credible?
Yes, with the only caveat being that it is predicated on an assumption that rail passenger revenue will continue to come in better than budget this year, which it is. However, other revenue accounts are coming in under budget. So at a total revenue line, we do not currently have a revenue surplus. And at least at this point, the forecast is that that would maintain throughout the rest of the year. So rail will do better than budget, but I do have offsetting reductions in the other categories.
Can I get a question of Rick, because that was
For the purpose of a question only, just for the purpose.
Rick, in looking at this proposal, with the exception of the issue of 75 cents parking versus a dollar parking, is it the position of staff that this would generate $109 million at a dollar for parking?
Yes.
Yeah, so the issue is not anything other than that one place where we already have said that, yes, we'll have to take a look at what happens overall in terms of generating revenues.
I agree completely. And actually, to as an offset, because this is never easy, the elasticity assumptions that are in here may be conservative, which would generate more revenue. I mean, there's a range. This isn't necessarily pure science. There's some art to this. So while we might not get a base ridership growth that we were anticipating or we're talking about, there could be some less elasticity than we would assume, because we don't have good elasticity studies right now using kind of industry standards. So when all is said and done, staff is comfortable that this would generate the $109
million. Okay. Now, we have follow-up questions on this point. Mr. Linton, Mr. Zimmerman, Mr. Kaufman.
I hope everybody heard the last comment that we don't have good elasticity studies. Taking that in account, where are we versus the rail versus the bus user, where are we in terms of meeting our targets? These projections of ridership increases, where are they coming from, rail or bus?
Rail is doing better than the budget assumed right now. Bus is doing not quite as good as budget assumed.
So we are starting before the fare increase with the rail passenger projections higher and the bus passengers being less.
Correct.
In terms of our targets. So our proposal is said disproportionately we're going to raise the fare on the rail rider again, okay, without having an elasticity study to suggest what the impact of that is going to be. We're going to build a budget based upon the projections of those ridership continuing to occur, not having an elasticity study that give us real good numbers, and we're going to build it on that, but we're going to raise it disproportionately on those same riders. The rational reason for doing this doesn't exist. So that's, once again, goes back to the fact that this is not a great proposal as we were put before. There's no rational reason for doing it this way. I'm going to have a substitute motion. At least I want to deal with we have an assumption that we will have these good ridership numbers, and if we don't, we can make adjustments mid-year. One of those adjustments will be on the parkers. I'm going to propose that we freeze that. Even if the proposal goes through, I would suggest that we don't have that option mid-year. That we freeze it where it is, and we have to eat those costs somewhere, either in subsidy or additional savings within the authority. I think we're already disproportionately putting burdens on those long-distance riders. That just continues to do that. And then when we have a budget at mid-year that's been based upon some faulty projections on continued ridership, then we're going to go back. Okay, and corrected by again raising the parking on those who are least afforded to be able to do so. Wrong-headed, not rational.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Mr. Harkin, if we take the proposal that is the motion before us, that is the proposal of the gentleman from Maryland, and we apply to it the assumptions that you used in generating your estimates for what was advertised, which produced a revenue estimate of $111 million. If we use those assumptions and apply it to this proposal, what revenue does it generate?
Are you asking me if we take the elasticity assumptions that were the basis of the public hearing document?
All the assumptions that you used, that were the parameters on which you generated the number of $111 million from the previous proposal.
I don't have a specific dollar amount, but if I applied those elasticities, it would generate less revenue.
Yeah, I kind of figured that one out.
I'm trying
to would like a specific number, and I'm surprised that you don't already have it.
It was in the $2 to $4 million range.
It's $4 million. It will all be lost on the first item.
All be lost on the item.
On the very first one, the base fare increase of 30 cents.
Oh,
That's where the effect would really occur. It's very small in all the other areas.
Your proposal doesn't make any difference on that.
No, I'm saying that the change in the assumption of elasticity, which staff, in fact, looked at and said this is not an unreasonable change, basically affects that first item, and it generates an additional $4 million, which then get distributed throughout this entire package.
So the base is still $1.65. We're just assuming fewer people.
Okay, but wait a minute. The change for the proposal changes the distance charges, mm-hmm. and
right.
that's where the revenue number is going. I mean, you're lowering the distance charge, so there's going to be less revenue.
Right.
The only way to get the revenue back up is by changing the elasticity number.
Correct.
But the elasticity, the only place that there was a substantial amount of additional revenue generated because of these changes, by changing the elasticity, was in that very first one. There were small amounts generated out of the others, but not much. There is revenue that is lost, which is then balanced by the elasticity change.
I agree.
Mr. Chairman, I understand overall what the thrust of the proposal is. And I appreciate the effort that's being made here, and I do think that there is much to be said for it. It's a very reasonable approach to a difficult situation. The one thing that I don't like about what we have here is the notion that we'll approve something with, you know, the variables we control being changed, and then change the parameters of the estimate that staff applies to try and say we get a different number in the end. I think that is a very dangerous thing for us to do. Now, you can argue about elasticity up and down, all around, and there is an ongoing debate. And it's not particularly a failing here. There are studies to justify the range of numbers we're talking about, from the very conservative one mm-hmm. staff used to the, you know, perhaps less conservative one that Mr. Benjamin argues for. Both of those are justifiable based on, you know, the best scholarship yes. that's being done. The reality is, in a short-term basis, we have a pretty good idea, and the difference we're talking about can be swamped by everything else that's going to happen that affects whether ridership goes up or down. My big concern about elasticity is really long-term, because I don't think we understand the long-term very well, and I don't know that study is going to help us much there. You can find out because we don't have a lot of data to show it. You can look at places that have perhaps done big increases and see what happened well out, but it's difficult to do. But I don't think that's the real issue here. The issue here is the integrity of the process by which we budget. So whatever we do at this point, whatever we would approve, some months from now we're going to be farther into working the budget, and staff will be generating new estimates. They'll have more data. They'll say we now have third quarter numbers in, and we have some estimates on fourth quarter, whatever, and we have to make adjustments. And so the budget, when you finally are getting around to approving it 6 months from now, these things go up and down and all. And almost everybody who engages in a public budgeting process starts early on with conservative assumptions. You'd be crazy not to, because you have to hit a target, and it's not how far on either side you get. You only get to go on one side of it. Mm-hmm. You can't wind up in a hole. They can't propose anything that gets them in a hole. Then they're in a lot of trouble. If they have extra money, people may accuse them of having hidden something, but they give it back and we all feel better about it. If they're in the hole, that's not permissible. Unless you're in the federal government, that's a different matter. We can't do that at this level. So I understand all that, and I'm prepared to say these estimates may be too conservative and we may be a little better off. That's fine. But I think we have to be consistent in what we use. So if we're going to go forward with this proposal, you know, which I think there's much to be said for that, I think we need to do it on the assumptions that were made in the hearing proposal we had in the first place. If it raises a bit less revenue, that's okay. We have to just face up to that. It means that the other one would have raised more revenue, and that might be true too. But I really think the integrity of the process requires that we use the same parameters at this point, the same assumptions that were made going into it. And then when they come, and if we, assuming we approve something, when they come back, you know, they go back to budgeting, they'll reestimate whatever they have, as they would whatever we approved, and come back and say, now we think it will generate not X, but X plus or X minus. And that's the way it works. So that's the one caution I would make. I really think it would be a mistake for us to go in and kind of tinker the number by changing a parameter that was one of the assumptions of the hearings.
Now, next I had Mr. Kaufman, who
my
this
question
would be
is already
for us. Okay, good. Further discussion. I just want to say, if I may, that that I'm prepared to support this proposal from Marilyn. I think that we have all worked hard to find a middle ground, to find as much of a consensus as we possibly could. This is not the proposal that went out for public comment. However, it does operate within the confines of that proposal that went out for public comment. And it does permit, you know, long-distance riders, a better situation, but I think it strikes the right balance. And I think at this point, when we consider what Plan B might be, I'm very much inclined to get this resolved, move on. If we're off by several million dollars, you know, I've been on this board, this is my ninth year. I have seen this authority come up with several million dollars, sometimes with amazing ease. And so, you know, I think we can work within the possibility that our crystal ball is off a little bit, and we can take appropriate action. But I think the option to not adopting this proposal is very unacceptable at this point. And I think we need to move forward with this proposal. Is there further discussion? Mr. Barry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me thank Mr. Benjamin and the Maryland principals for this thoughtful proposal. You know, philosophically, what happened, we have a regional authority with three jurisdictions. Each jurisdiction has its own set of priorities or needs or philosophies, or the politics are different. And obviously it has to be compromised, which means that nobody gets everything that they want. If that's the case, then we ought to be willing to look at making some adjustments. Like, for instance, I stand firm, if I had my way about it, of no bus fare increases at all, because it falls disproportionately on constituents that I serve, low to moderate income people, wherever they may be. Are they in Fairfax or Arlington or in Georges? And so, as Mr. Graham said, what are the alternatives? You know, and the 10-cent increase, I wouldn't like it, but on the other hand, in the spirit of trying to make this process work and compromise, I'm prepared to support this proposal. And I would hope that everyone would see that the same way philosophically, that there has to be some compromises on this. I like to, at some point, I don't know if about this subject, but this whole question of the long-distance riders always comes up since I've been in this board as being unfair, inequitable. And I don't know. It seems to me that we ought to, maybe some studies been done, to look at various lines and see what the operating expenses are and what the revenue is, to see whether or not there's a widening gap between long distance revenues and operating costs. I don't know. But at least we'll find some way scientifically to answer that kind of question. Have there been any studies done on that kind of question?
Not recently.
Well, I think we're going to do that as a way of start, at least agreeing that this is a legitimate, well, it's all legitimate, that this is a real debatable issue, or whether or not it's something we can just get past at some point. Unless we do that, we're going to continue every time we come up. It's going to be this issue. This is my first year on the board. I got the same kind of issue. And those who represent suburban jurisdictions raise this question a lot more strongly than we do in the District of Columbia, which has shorter routes, both metro, rail, and bus. So I am going to support this proposal reluctantly. But Mr. Graham is very convincing. Ms. Lanham is very convincing, because I'd like to be united in the district.
Further discussion? Before we go to the second round, anyone else who hasn't spoken? Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As was indicated, this is still a balancing of the budget on the back of the long haul rider. And while earlier I mentioned, you know, 6 inches of assumptions and piling on, and as Mr. Zimmerman was able to ferret out, we've seen a change of assumptions in mid-game. And anytime you start changing assumptions in mid-game on a budget, it gets dangerous, and frankly, those of us in local governments, if we do a change of assumptions like that, that's how we lose our bond rating. So again, I fundamentally feel with this motion, while it's striking balances, it's striking balances on already poor docks. And I feel instead of listening to our riders, and frankly that includes instead of listening to our riders advisory council, we're assuming our long distance riders are basically masochistic drones who will take the hit and continue to come in ever larger numbers. And I don't believe the numbers will be there.
Further discussion? Further discussion?
Mr. Governor, if I could just...
Mr. Zimmerman.
Can I just ask that I would actually like agreement on what I suggested, that if this is approved, and of course the first vote would obviously be just to substitute a motion, I don't know the appropriate time, but I would like the board to be directing that the staff will base revenue estimates in this on the same assumptions for this point. Obviously they're going to revise them in the future, but from this point that they'll use the same assumptions. It seems like it doesn't change the revenue number that much, but at least you should have credibility in what you're going forward with, and I think you'd be better off making that direction.
I have a second. I think that's a non-negotiable. I don't think any of us could feel comfortable if we went in with different assumptions that we're still
and if Mr. Benjamin turns out to be right on the other end, that's great, but
I have no problem with I agree actually with both your point and Mr. Linton's point, and I have no problem with that, and it would focus to a very great degree our efforts between now and the adoption of the budget on A, cost reduction in order to make sure that everything balances, and B, careful examination of the revenues which are in fact being generated so that we get a better balance at that time. So I would have no problem with those changes.
Further discussion? Mr. Barry?
Chairman, can I ask staff, is it possible technologically and otherwise to do such a study on the revenue generated, operating costs?
Yeah, actually, I think we're in a rare position now to do this study with this new fare increase. We look back at the last two fare increases, and there's been common discussion that the last time we raised fares, ridership increased, so there was no elasticity. When we got a layer below that, what we remembered was at the same time we raised fares last time, we annualized the opening of the Largo extension. We annualized the New York Avenue infill station. There were two new parking garages that came online. We opened the railroad a half hour earlier in the morning. We kept the railroad open later at night on the weekends. So there were a good half a dozen major things that would cause ridership to go up. At the same time, a fare increase would cause ridership to go down. And when you just look at the aggregate numbers, you can't really tell what's going on. Right now, there's no service changes happening. So we're in a very rare, perfect opportunity to actually measure customer changes.
Okay.
I was speaking about the operating costs.
Yes, sir.
And the revenue generated.
Yes, sir.
In some kind of systematic way.
All of that, beginning with the day.
How long do you think it would take?
I'd like to say 6 months to let actual ridership changes happen.
That'd be a good way. Chairman, is that okay?
That's fine.
Get that done.
Further discussion, Mr. Linton?
I actually have a proposal that I've circulated among the board that it would actually call for a fare policy proposal so we get a chance to examine all of these elements in a rational way, including all the comments that you made and also the ones that they have made as well. So I think we need to get a handle around this once and for all. So that's...
The discussion is now on the motion to substitute. Further discussion on the motion to substitute. Hearing none. All those in favor of substituting this motion for the motion that was previously made, raise your right hand. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Those opposed, same sign. By a vote of 8-3, the substitution is made. So we are now voting on the proposal as substituted.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Mr. Chairman, at the beginning of this year, when Mr. Cato came in and said that he was going to be re-examining the budget that had been proposed and that he would not propose have a fare increase proposal that year, he indicated a couple of things that he thought should happen before a fare increase were to go through. first being that there needed to be an immediate real scrub of the budget to see what savings could be made, which he did, of course, and you know, we got rid of some 200 or 300 people in this organization and saved something over $30 million as a result of that. But the other thing he mentioned was that there should be a rational fare policy so that we don't periodically, at irregular intervals, consider fare increases on the basis of filling some hole. That I was glad to hear because it's something that I argued the last time there was a fare increase proposal that I didn't support. And have asked ever since that we come up with a rational way to make the price of our product be adjusted on a fairly regular, predictable basis by reasonable increments that people can know, whether it's a customer or a government that has the budget, roughly what it is that's likely to happen, when it's likely to happen, and that it doesn't go too far in any one direction, too far to kilter over time. I've argued that over and over again, and interestingly, everyone has agreed with me every time I've made the point. Heads nod, people say, yes, we should do that. I wasn't happy that we advertised a change in the tariff without including such a provision. As a result, we can't make it actually a fixed policy that will go forward with certainty by anything we do today because it wasn't what was advertised. I nonetheless believe we should make a commitment to a rational policy that is the baseline from which we work, which in the future would mean that, of course, we'll have our public hearings, we'll have to when the next time this comes up, and the board can decide whether or not to incorporate it on an ongoing basis then, I suppose, but that we should at least make the policy going forward, in particular, the direction to staff as they prepare, as they do regularly on an ongoing basis, their estimates of where the budget is now and their status reports and their projection for what's going to happen over 5 or 6 years when they prepare a budget on an assumption about what a policy would be that is not that the fares are the same as they are now forever. If you have in your governments, you make assumptions looking forward, the staff has to assume the tax rates as they are until you tell them the tax rates are going to be something else. And that's essentially what they do here. They have to assume that fares are what they are. And that winds up being the baseline from which we work, and we wind up in the same situation. And we put off the very painful process that we're going through now, sometimes a little too long, and then we have a tougher choice of how much it's going to be, and we're in the situation we're in now, in part whether we do this now or we put it off 6 months and it gets even harder to do. So I am proposing, I want to hand around now something I know I've talked to all of you about, a proposal that would say as part of this action we make direction to staff by which it would be the stated policy of this board that subsequent to the action on this fare, assuming this is to be approved, that there would be, the policy will be to have fare increases only on a biennial basis, but on a biennial basis, beginning in 2.5 years. In other words, starting July 1st, 2010, and then the next one would be July 1st, 2012, 2014, and so on, that would be based essentially on the cost of living, so that there would be a proportional increase. I'm going to also pass out some tables that show exactly what that means on a biennial basis in terms of our current fares and the fare that is would be approved under the motion before us. And so you would have an increase all the way across that would basically be equivalent to the change in the cost of living. This would mean that for the rider, over time, the amount that we're taking out of their pocket would be the same in 2 years, roughly, as it is after you take this action. And 2 years after that, it would be roughly the same. That's not a perfect approach. But what it means is the customer is basically protected. We're saying we're not going to have a situation in which we're going to have to argue about some drastic increase and worry about what the impact that would be on ridership. And you know, frankly, given the discussion we've had here, I think that's part of the concern that if you wait too long and you don't ever increase fares, you inevitably wind up with impacts on service. I mean, I'm one who would, if there were a way to cut all fares in half, you know, I think that would be good policy for this region. I think it would be a smart thing to do. it might not be smart to let it all be for free, because there are some advantages to have people having to pay something to use something. But you could lower it a lot, and our air quality would be better, and our traffic congestion would be better, and the social equity in our communities would be better. But I know I can't get the various governments of the region to come up with the subsidy that would do that. I know that last year, when we didn't raise fares, we also had to get an 8% increase in subsidy, and you can't do that too many years in a row. And I know that the budget we're looking at now presumes a 6.5% increase in subsidy to maintain level of service and hopefully improve quality some, even with the fare increase we're talking about. And so realistically, the fares we have here, which, by the way, are quite competitive if you look around major metropolitan areas. That wasn't always true. There was a point at which we were really high. We went a lot of years without a fare increase, and now in some cases we're low. And it isn't my idea of the perfect level for fares, but I think we function at roughly this amount of cost for using public transportation in the Washington metropolitan area. And I'm asking that we essentially say we want to try and lock that in place, recognizing it is going to have to go up, but it needs to be going up by a known amount that's not a panic every time of too much or too little, or when, or are we not going to be able to agree, so we're going to spend another year or two putting it off. And so what I'm proposing would add language, a final resolve clause that says, subsequent to the adoption of fare changes to the FY 2009 budget, policy will be adhered to, which will call for the implementation of future fare increases to occur on a biennial basis beginning fiscal year 2011 at July 1st, 2010. Those subsequent biennial fare increases will be tied to the biennial increase in the consumer price index for that period, and all fares will increase proportionally, subject to the public hearing requirements of the WMATA compact. And I want to insert after proportionally a parenthesis that says, as detailed in attachment B. Attachment B would be the set of tables that I handed out to you. Which shows exactly. That's to parallel the language previously in the resolution, which refers to attachment A, which is by which the resolution ties to the tables that show what the fares are for those. Now, again, this doesn't mean that it's set in stone. There would have to be a public hearing before that July 1st, 2010 to ratify this, and the board in its wisdom could decide to do things differently. But I think it would be an important statement adding to stability in the revenue structure around here, adding to stability in the political process by which we develop a budget. And I think that it would be an important commitment that would be appreciated ultimately by not only our customers, but by the partners who we depend upon to approve budgets that ultimately cover the bills around here. So, Mr. Chairman, I move the board approve this amendment to the main motion is before us, and I hope it will be the pleasure of the committee to approve.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmerman. I suspect that there is support for this. I would just ask just one clarification, if I may, please, because I think we need to, as you have pointed out very clearly, is that this would be subject to all of the requirements of the WMATA compact, including the board action. So I think in the interest of clarity, let's delete the words public hearing.
Just say
subject to the requirements of the WMATA compact.
That's fine with me.
I don't want to suggest that we're just picking one requirement. We couldn't do that if we wanted to, but just for the interest of clarity. Mr. Monomay?
Do you need a second on the motion?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Monomay. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
It's been seconded by Mr. Linton.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Barrett.
In terms of the these increases should be tied to the consumer price index, well, it seems to me that there may be instances when the labor organizations negotiate a contract that gives increases beyond the consumer price index. And so it seems to me that there may not be enough discussion, but I think that tying to consumer index might not be the most wise thing to do at this point, since the budget is weighted heavily on our employees in terms of the proportional amount of money. So I do have a concern that if you adopt this as a policy, we'll be stuck with it in the future of time, fare increases. This is everyone else that you're trying to do in terms of predictability, but I'm not sure we'll apply just for just to consumer index. Ms. Dimon, you see what I'm saying? There's something that you can say that captures what you want to do without necessarily tying it to the consumer price index.
I think that was a question put to you.
Yes, sir.
I think that you either pick a number or you don't. And I think that this is a reasonable one that is based on, I mean, there's a philosophical statement here, which is that I'm trying to say we take so much out of people's pockets, and we're going to try and keep that stable and not have it go up. Now, obviously, as I said, the budget conditions in 2 years could lead the board to do something different. It says this is the base from which we're working. It's not perfect, but nothing is perfect. You know, if it's going to be too high, it's going to be too low. There has to be some principle. The principle that I've chosen and that I'm recommending is that we say we're going to try and stabilize how much it costs for our customers in real terms to use our system.
And by de facto doing that, the only other place you would get any shortfall if the labor organizations had negotiated an increase beyond some price index in the subsidy. So you are de facto committing yourself to the subsidy.
No, but I'm assuming that I have no control over what labor agreements that the board...
Well, I'm saying my point, though, is that the cost is going to be there, going to increase every year. I agree with you on that. I'm just saying that I support this, except that I want to recognize that if there's not sufficient income and by fare increases tied to the consumer price index to cover the operating costs, and be made up some place, either cutting services or subsidy increases.
You are right.
All right? Absolutely. That's it. I just want to recognize the
rule. Well, let me just say, by way of clarity for this discussion, is that we cannot bind any subsequent board. And so, you know, Mr. Zimmerman recognizes that all of the processes relating to a fare increase would have to be followed one after the other, just as what we've done this year. I mean, this is an indication of direction. It's, you know, it's a guidance to future boards, but future boards are going to do with the future public what they please, and there's just no restraint in that regard. And I think a number of people wanted to speak. Let me just get the order right.
It's a point of clarification.
Point of clarification.
And so again, the tie of the CPI essentially is the max. What the FASB shows is the maximum increase in those subsequent years.
Again,
it shows what you would get on the assumption that there's roughly a 3% annual change in the CPI.
Again, it's an encouragement. All right, who wishes to speak on the first round? Mr. Benjamin, Ms. Hewlett, Mr. Giancola, okay, Mr. Benjamin.
I just wanted to note an inconsistency between what now would become Attachment A and Attachment B. Attachment A uses as Attachment A, which we just approved, is a different fare proposal than what this one assumes. And so for attachment B to work, staff is going to have to generate new numbers.
Yes.
It has a different set. The first column is 09 fare, and it uses what went to public hearing, not what we just approved.
If that's the case, Mr. Benjamin, I certainly would accept an amendment that says that attachment B would be adjusted to be consistent with the attachment A that will go with the motion that we presumably will approve.
Which I hope we could do. Okay. The other thing is I'm curious about the other issue that you raised, Mr. Zimmerman, and that is the elasticities. I see the notes sit here, and I see the little delta 0.1 at the top. It wasn't clear to me whether this was consistent with, again, your instruction to staff that everything be done against the same set of assumptions. Not clear to me that this was.
Staff generated that, and I only saw the table this morning.
Right.
I would agree to something that would say it should be consistent with the rest of them.
Okay, so the two things are, one, to adjust this column, and number two, to use the same assumptions as we are using in revenue generated by the Table A fare increase.
I have no objection to that.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're doing everything the same way. And let me just note, I very strongly support your principle. I think what you're proposing is a very good idea, and I think the idea of regularity and predictability of fare increases is extremely important, and I support the proposal.
Correct. Ms. Hewlett?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, support this. Mr. Zimmerman, I've been on the board 8 months. This is my first grueling fare increase issue. You made a key point about different budgets may dictate in future years something different, and different boards may do something different. Mine was just a matter of semantics in terms of referring to it as fare adjustments. Only because I don't know that there's any way that it, I don't know if one if something would go up, and I don't know whether there would be an instance where everything where we wouldn't have an increase.
I mean, we could have actual depression and contraction and prices falling. Are you at a specific change you're looking at?
No, I just spoke for breakfast. I don't know that if there were any instance. I thought it sounded a little bit. It just seems more appropriate to refer to it as just fare adjustments.
You mean where it says future fare increases, mm-hmm. you would say adjustments?
Mm-hmm. It's a minor thing.
It's
a major thing.
I think it comes to the same thing either way. And I can.
Is there objection to replacing the word increases with the word adjustment? Is there objection? Objection? Hearing none, then that motion will be modified. Now we go to Mr. Giancola.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Mr. Zimmerman for proposing this. I've been a longtime supporter of indexing, and I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get a discussion on the committee meeting about the indexing policy earlier. But that being said, I think that we have to kind of go back to what the general manager did brief us on previously, in that the cost increases, which are tied for Metro, which are tied more to other kinds of costs that increase significantly higher than the consumer price index. And so I, while I can support this, I would certainly be more amenable to having something put in along the lines of a biennial increase in the consumer price index or other appropriately approved index developed by the authority. And so I'd like to kind of expand this to give us a little more flexibility, because I think if we make it max 3% a year, if it turns out to be that, and in fact we're seeing a 6 to 9% increase in cost, then I'd be a little concerned about us restricting our flexibility. So again, I think it's a great first step, but I'd just like to see a little more flexibility built into the amendment.
Is there objection to adding the language suggested by Mr. Jim?
Yeah, I would object. I could not accept that.
Okay, so that's
Mr. Chairman, I understand.
I think I'd rather keep the order. I don't think he asked a question.
Okay,
you made a suggestion, and there is objection to incorporating that. If you wish to make that as an amendment, Mr. Giancola, it can be heard as an amendment.
Well, only if I have some support. You know, I'd like to say. I would like to make that amendment if we could.
All right. It has been moved to add, and let's make sure we have the language, Mr. Giancola.
Biennial increase in the consumer price index or other appropriately developed transportation index by the authority.
Is there a second to the amendment? Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. Discussion is now on the amendment. Is everyone aware of what the amendment is? Okay, good. Ms. Hutchins?
It's adjustment. Would you repeat his language just for him?
Yes. Or other appropriate index, transportation index, I think you said, transportation index developed by the authority. Or other, so there's a CPI possibility, there's a possibility of another index being established by the authority. Ms. Hutchins?
I just wanted to comment on and seconding that. I think what Mr. Zimmerman has brought forward is really fundamentally where we had hoped we'd start. And we're sort of starting on the back end. We've decided to propose a fare increase. We now would decide to propose a policy. And we proposed a policy that has a particular measurement of a tool, but we started out saying we wanted to look at a bunch of tools and the data that it would provide us so that we could make a judgment. I think we still need to be there. We've moved ahead, at least out of the committee piece, as to what the fare increase would be. I still go back to the foundation that it's fundamentally building in a long-term inequity. But the second part of that is we really do need to look at what might be an opportunity to build in a tool or an index that might work under different scenarios so that we can feel comfortable that the policy that we adopt is something that we can consistently follow. We started out saying we wanted and recognized that we needed to convey to the public that fare increases are part of our budgetary tool. It gives the general manager the opportunity to know what he or she can work with in developing a budget. It also tells the consumers what they can contribute in terms of the development of that budget for the services that they receive. As we move through that, we need to be able to look back and determine whether or not we're using a viable tool that gets us to that. And I think the language is one that we probably need to look back at and see if there are others. Mr. Zimmerman's done the work there, and that's fine with me. I think this is a good proposal in terms of trying to look at developing the policy. I think we're behind the eight ball now in terms of development of policy, but I think we should provide as much latitude for us going forward.
Okay, now we had an order because we had Ms. Hutchins and Mary. Okay, so we'll have to pass on that. Let's see, who next wants to speak? Mr. Kaufman, Mr. Linton, Mr. Monomay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On the amendment.
Yes. This is basically institutionalizing a raw deal. The key word in Mr. Zimmerman's motion is proportionally. So what this is saying for the long-haul riders coming from Montgomery County, Prince George's County, and Fairfax County is that not only are we sticking it to you with the 09 budget, we're going to make this a biennial event. Second point is that all of this interest of public hearings, and I found it interesting to your colleagues who were reluctant to entertain my proposal because it would require us going to the riders twice in 1 year. Now some of folks have taken pains to ensure the words public hearing aren't even in the resolution. You know, a reluctance again to deal with our riders. But the only comfort I guess I'll have in voting against this is tied to, you know, increases in the consumer price index. Well, the item that we managed to get struck, you know, from the agenda clearly said that the costs are going up at twice the rate of the CPI anyway, so this is a kabuki dance.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. Mr. Linton?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure when's the appropriate time to do this, and I heard mention of a fair policy. This is not a fair policy. This is an index of policy. So I think we need to be direct that what this is a way to index to the consumer price index is what Mr. Zimmerman is proposing. I do want to introduce, and I want some support today for a full-blown study and discussion on a fair policy that would consider all the variables that relates to this region, and that would in and of itself also examine the basis in which we would put together index. So it probably would be more consistent with the amendment that's on the table, because you will then get a chance to examine what is the appropriate index for the rational fair policy that you want for the region. I can understand Mr. Zimmerman's desire to put something forward. The CPI is always a very rational and acceptable one in the industry and across the country for budgeting purposes. So I think but I would greatly like to support the amendment that was suggested. It gives us a little more flexibility and allows us the ability to tie it to a fair policy that's rational, and then we'd be able to use that as a basis for the index. So I would support the amendment.
Did you want to say something?
I get to speak here?
Well, I've got a lineup, and next is Mr. Monomay, and then you. But Mr. Ewell is back. So We're on the amendment.
I'll wait till everybody's finished.
Okay, we're on the amendment. We're on the amendment. Mr. Monahan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just to respond back to the amendment to include additional indices to this analysis, I think while if you were looking from just the agencies or the authorities' perspective, looking at how costs, increases in costs impact the authorities' operations, it's very easy from that perspective to say costs are only up at double the cost of the CPI and feel comfortable being there. But I think going back to the public hearing process, this is about our riders and the way that they view the increasing costs associated with the system. I think that's the reason why tying it to their costs, their future costs, is a more rational way for us as an authority that is concerned about the impact on our riders to frame it. So I think that may be the logic behind CPI versus other indices. Because we can certainly look out for the authorities' interest in terms of making sure we have all the money we need, but I think we want to make sure we have people that are riding in the seat that are going to be paying for this fare. So I will not support the amendments to the original amendment. The amendment to the original amendment maintaining the CPI.
I think we understood.
You understood?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you. I appreciate Mr. Monahan's comments, and indeed he does capture the reason, the rationale that I'm using. I've said that from the beginning. Part of the reason we haven't gotten anywhere on this, and part of the reason we're in a situation where we had something removed from the agenda that was speaking to this, is we get caught up in this. What's the right index? And we have all this complicated. And I think that's part of the problem. And there is a fundamental question though about whether any index or any basis for fare increases should be tied to something that matters in the first instance to our customers or in the first instance to the operation of the agency. And, Mr. Barry has pointed out correctly, and Mr. Jankola has pointed out, what staff has pointed out, which is that costs can go up higher for this agency than the cost of living. That is true. And in recent years, that has been true. The transportation index, cost index has gone up more than CPI. Now, that isn't something that's always going to be the case. And, over time, things go up and down. And, that's not something you can do anything about. You basically have to pick what do you think should be most tied to. And you could say, we want fares to be tied to cost of the agency. That is an alternative way to go at this. I respect that as an alternative approach and understand why someone would want to do it. For the reasons Mr. Monahan very well said, that's not what I think we should do. But it's reasonable to do. What I don't think is reasonable to do is the motion that is before us now to amend this, because it basically gives no direction. It essentially punts on this one more time, and it is my intention to pick something, go with it, and recognize that we may have to adjust in 2 years' time as we get to the next decision point. But I want us to actually be giving clear direction to staff that when they generate their tables, they know what number they're supposed to use for now until we tell them something else. So I would ask that you not approve the secondary amendment before you, but to stick with
Mr. Giancola.
Thank you. As I mentioned earlier when I discussed my concerns, I said I could support the original motion without an amendment. I would have liked to amend it to include other flexibility, but certainly recognizing the lack of support around the table, I will withdraw the amendment to the amendment.
Okay, so the amendment is withdrawn. We are now on the Zimmerman proposal.
Chairman.
Zimmerman proposal. Is there further discussion on
the amendment? I didn't want to speak before we do it, so I guess technically I can't speak to it.
You can speak to the Zimmerman proposal.
Well, I'll speak to that.
Okay.
As I thought about it, Giancola raised some other issues, and it's clear that every year the cost increases has been anywhere between twice better than the consumer price index. So we know where we hit it. That's going to happen. But we're going to have a consumer price index much less than actual cost growth, legitimate cost of the authority. And it will take a great deal of political muscle to greatly increase the subsidy in most of these jurisdictions. No question about that. You may not want to say that, but I know how difficult it is in the District of Columbia to get more than we get in this grant. You know that yourself. We fought for it. It's been difficult because it's competing for other things. But the consumer price index itself is a collaboration of a whole bunch of things, Jim, and it's not just transportation, it's a whole number of products that you look at to come with that average consumer price index. What we need to look at is what are the indices that you can tie to transportation, to both metro rail and bus operation around the country. But look at how other people do it. So I think we are painting ourselves into a hole here. It was well intentioned that the consumer price index up front has been acknowledged is not going to cover the full cost of the authority. If we're prepared to recognize it, as I think Mr. Jimmons, and we ought to, we also got to be prepared to take the next step. Even if we can't find future boards, Mr. Graham, the future boards have to be able to take the next step of either adding to the subsidy, the COVID costs, or reducing service, neither of which are very attractive. So I've changed my mind about that. Okay. I don't like that.
Mr. Chairman?
Just 1 second. Let me have the board discuss this first under the committee. This is not the board. This is the committee. And we have Mr. Ewell, who has...
Actually, we're dealing amendments to amendments to before we get to voting on the main motion, right?
This is an amendment to a motion, to a main motion.
I want to wait till we get to the main motion.
Okay, good. Fine. Ms. Hutchins?
No, I just wanted to comment that I think, while Mr. Zimmerman's proposal is merited in terms of trying to get us to actually put something on the table and be able to move forward in terms of an ongoing policy, I think I don't want to fail to iterate the concern of building in how the index is distributed over the modes of transportation, and therefore you're building in the old inequity, as we indicated before. And maybe one way of looking at it is to look at the revenue that's needed and the revenue be distributed over the modes as they may be able to reflect the needs across the basis for the long term, that is, whether it's bus, rail, parking, et cetera, versus building it in as fixed going forward. Because I think by doing so, we've already started out on the wrong foot, as I've said before. So the consideration of looking at just the revenue base of it that we want to generate and using that as the indexing piece as one alternative that could be used. It does not define the predictability for each of the riders by putting it on the mode, but it does address the need of the authority at that time.
Well, I just want to say that I'll be voting in favor of this proposal. I think this is something that, you know, we have discussed year after year after year. Every fair proposal debate we've had has mentioned this, and to finally be able to actually have a determination on this issue for future purposes, subject of course to whatever a future board wishes to do, what a future public wishes to do, and what future needs are. But at least we are saying that we want to have a fair policy which is substantial and distinguished from these. You inherited this. You came on board, and there you went right off to the races. But I think in the future, this will provide a rhyme to what I think is already reason. Is there further discussion? Further discussion. All those in favor of the...
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question, please?
You're going to ask a question.
I would like...
You, of yourself, or...
No, sir, of Mr. Zimmerman. I want to understand if this would preclude any fare increase for fiscal year 2010.
I'll answer that question. This is all subject to the operation of the WMATA compact. And so a future board at that time could determine what it wished to do. And I think that's been made very clear in this discussion. I think this has been made very clear. Is there further, hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Well, all those in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Those opposed, same sign. 1, 2, 3. The motion carries by a vote of 8-3. We are now on the main motion as substituted and as amended. Is there further discussion? Mr. Linton.
Mr. Chairman, I distribute around the table a paper, more or less, that talks about adopting a fair policy. I don't have an amendment, but I will fashion one here at the table to suggest that this board directs the staff to develop and study with bringing back to this board with a recommendation a full-blown fair policy that would include looking at consideration of differences between core areas of the system, uniqueness of our travelers, differences in peak and off-season costs, demand profiles, a whole series of variables that go into looking at a comprehensive fair policy. I would hope that we could use this fair policy to make the appropriate adjustments in our fair structure, so that the inequities that unfortunately we are moving forth with because we're trying to close a gap in our budget does not have to be permanent, that we get a chance to examine a rational fair policy that serves the interests of this entire region. I would ask for that amendment, in essence, be added to this budget.
Second.
Is there, without objection, we will accept that amendment. Without objection, the amendment is accepted. We are now on the main motion as substituted and as amended. Substituted and amended. Is there discussion? Now, I know Mr. Ewell, Mayor Ewell, has been waiting for this. You have another amendment. Do you want to?
It's been a busy day.
Yes.
I've had to sit through these hearings, and I think Mr. Benjamin made it very clear that we don't do these hearings just because it's required by the compact and it's also required by the FDA. There is a rational reason to hear from our writers. We have a writers advisory council. We've gone through a lot of deliberations to try to get input from the people that use this system every single day. One of the issues that I think is uniformly agreement that was shown on the chart was the concerns about service. That our writers said over and over again that we have issues with service. One of the things that I don't think we have adopted in this transit system, and it has been adopted in some others, is a service guarantee, which in fact allows riders to get reimbursement for our failure to deliver service with some reliability. I know Philadelphia has a service guarantee where, in fact, on lines when there's 15 minutes, in some cities 20 minutes, when that service fails, they can receive a voucher where they can get returns on their fare. If we're serious about, I've always felt that show me the money, that determines how serious you are about a commitment. If we're committing to these riders who come to us saying that I could deal with a fare increase, but I need some issues that tells me that I'm going to get some better service. One of the ways that we can tie ourselves as a board and also our staff is giving our riders in this region some guarantee. And it would come out of our hats, our budget, if in fact we don't do that. And we shouldn't fill that hole with subsidies. I mean, we would have to make some issues within our own budget to accommodate those loss in revenues. But once again, it ties us to delivering some service to our riders. So I would ask that we add for once and for all to this board a reasonable approach to a service guarantee with refunds for our riders when, in fact, we don't miss those targets.
Mr. Linton, if I may ask you a question. Are you suggesting this as something that we might ask the staff to review and report back to us on so that we can see the best practices in other jurisdictions, including Philadelphia, Pennsylvania?
I'm I'm asking the staff to report back to us with a recommendation.
Excellent. Without objection, that can be accepted. Is there any objection? Any objection? Hearing none, that is incorporated into the main motion. Is there further discussion on the main motion? Mayor Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's been, I've been quiet sitting here listening to everyone, but it's been very interesting and certainly very valuable. I have nothing new to offer that hasn't already been said, other than from a purely historical perspective, in that as a trained and educated accountant, I don't like numbers, I will tell you that. But for more than 30-some years, I've been involved in developing budgets not only for a public school system and city governments and nonprofits and hospitals and other corporations. It's not an easy task. And you know, what we've gone have gone through and are going through is the challenges are no different, but nonetheless, we have to get to the point of reaching some consensus and agreement to adopt the budget. Otherwise, everything else comes to a screeching halt. That being said, we recognize the fact that the general manager over the past year or less has made some significant cost reductions, and there are other reductions to be made that are forthcoming, hopefully, if any. But nonetheless, we realize that we need additional revenues to continue to operate and grow this system. But I will tell you that my friend, who's the substitute motion he just made, the amendment, is right on key, because we can't begin to raise fares or do anything else unless we seriously address and come up with a plan and a commitment for improving service. That is it in a nutshell. And I've had this discussion with staff, you know, when they started meeting with us individually several months ago. I said, you know, we can do everything we want in terms of fares, but if we can't convince John Q. Public that service is going to improve and it's going to make it better for them, we're just wasting our time. And so I agree that we need to be addressing this and service back guarantee, whatever you want to call it, I think is a starting point. It may not be the cure-all to really make, you know, be the proof in the pudding, but I think this board really needs to be committed, and I believe the staff is, but we need to show it. I mean, every time we the board or the staff says there's been some service improvements and enhancements, PR goes out one day, the same day something else goes wrong. And you know, we need to find ways to minimize what's going wrong. But nonetheless, no one takes comfort in having fares increases or taxes increase, what have you. But it's life. I mean, we have to do these things if people want the services, and certainly they want transit. We want to get folks out of their cars. We want to address environmental challenges, but those of us that have to make the tough decision have a fiduciary responsibility, and we have to do what's right. And while I don't want to see my local subsidy for my jurisdiction increased even up to 6.5%, I certainly don't want to see it go past that. But we have to do what's right, and if we've listened to the riders through the public hearing processes and so forth, nonetheless, they're not going to be happy with what we do decide here today, and hopefully we'll make a decision today. But I've been around long enough to come to realize that once you make the decision, you put it to bed, then you move on. And hopefully that's what will happen in this case. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Yule. Further discussion, hearing none. We are now voting on the main motion as substituted and as amended several times. Everyone is clear on what we're voting on. So all those in favor of that motion as substituted and as amended, raise your right hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And those opposed, same sign. By a vote of 8-2, the main motion as substituted and as amended is adopted. And we now proceed to our next order of business, which I think is the Southeastern Bus Garage.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could just take a moment to thank my staff and the jurisdictional staff. This has been a very challenging exercise for all of us. I hope we've supported the board the way you needed support. And I'm just happy we're here.
Well, I was going to forego all of those commendations until the board acted, because this is just the committee. Well, one never knows. There's many,
that, oops.
Many a slip betwixt the cup and the lip, you know. But certainly, we would all join with you, Mr. Harcum, in that commendation. The Southeastern Bus Garage, is there a way to, because we're now at 5 minutes after 12, Mr. Kaufman?
One way, Mr. Chairman, is frankly, I think this item needs to be deferred because we're being asked to take action in the absence of appraisals for all the properties that are being asked to make a fairly significant movement of finances without knowing whether these numbers hold. We don't know whether these numbers pass muster for standpoint of us, our local jurisdictions, or the federal partners, so I don't think it's prime time.
Mr. Bonamay?
Well, I was going to, after I was going to make an amendment to the motion, and it really was to address the concerns that Mr. Kaufman does have it, that this number five on the purpose to authorize negotiation and execution of the property exchange, it would be contingent upon the approval of the Federal Transit Administration, which would require all those issues or address all those issues that I believe are still unsettled between the jurisdictions, the appraisal, etc. If we put a caveat that it was contingent upon FTA approval, I think we'd be able to work through the issues and then move forward.
Mr. Chairman, that wouldn't do it for me because that would be ignoring my fiduciary responsibilities for the second time today. And basically assuming that I'm happy with it, even though I haven't seen anything, and that the feds will make me whole. And I can't go there on the part of the representative of Fairfax County.
Well, I can only suggest at this point, this is an
adjournment. So I would make a motion to defer this item.
Okay. It's been moved to defer to a particular date, or?
Until such time as staff can provide us with specific appraisals for all the properties of ours, so we know this is, in fact, a good deal for the authority.
It's been moved. Is there a second? Is there a second? Hearing no second, the motion fails for lack of a second. We'll now proceed to the agenda item. Who is making the presentation?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Jack Requa.
Sir. Again, we've been before the board at six earlier times to discuss different aspects of this project in an attempt to move this along towards a replacement facility. We are asking for the board, and I'll try to shorten the discussion, to approving in July there was a public hearing that was led by Mr. Monomay after his comments as the Director of Transportation for the district. We have very many positive comments at the public hearing. We'd like to approve the public hearing staff report, the final environmental assessment, the final general plans, and a final financial plan. We'd also like to approve the project in concept and to amend the mass transit plan, again, subject to the availability of funding. It's in the Finance Committee because we'd like to amend the capital budget to include the $60 million that would be the proceeds from the sale of the property towards the project, and the $9.25 million that would come from the proceeds of the sale of the project for the operating assistance that would be required to operate the additional expense for the service that would be operated during the interim for the replacement of the facility. And we have been working with the district to attempt.
Mr. Requa,
yes.
Let me interrupt you just for a second. A suggestion has been made that perhaps we could go directly just to questions on this matter.
That's fine.
It has been before this committee and this board on numerous occasions.
Be fine.
While we're always ready for more detail, unless there's objection, we will proceed to questions.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Barry.
Chairman.
Anyway, Mr. Barry, will you move approval of the proposal?
I move approval of the proposal.
It's been moved by Mr. Barry. It's seconded by Mr. Bonamay. Mr. Barry, do you wish to speak to your motion?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. This Southeast Bus Garage has been around for the last 25, 30, 40 years, what I know. There have been discussions about it. There have been attempts to find appraisal when I was mayor. an effort to move it to various places. And now is the time to move ahead. For several reasons. One, we have a location that the district has agreed to, and that the constituents in Ward 8 that be most affected by this has agreed to. I think all would agree that at the public hearings of almost 90-95% agreement. In fact, there was probably no one, even people who usually dissent in my community, about everything supported this proposal. But another overriding reason is that the Southeast Bus Garage, which is presently located on M Street, is in the way of progress. This is a baseball district right down the street from my $700 million new Nationals baseball stadium. And Mayor Williams started it, but Mayor Fenty has encouraged development in that entire area. There are probably 10 to 13 cranes in that area. Now, we need to move and get this done, develop the financing for it, and get it moved. Now, there's some people who say, well, we shouldn't do anything because of the lawsuit. Well, I know there's been an injunction issue, so we should move ahead. And Ms. Grand Lawyer and other lawyers here. So I would urge all of my colleagues on this committee to support this and to commend the staff. Yeah, you've done a tremendously good job of coming out to these community meetings. And usually we're very hostile, but this instance we weren't because we want it there now. And so, Ms. Graham, I urge us to support this enthusiastically.
Further discussion? Mayor Yule?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Can I just get staff clarification with regards to future expansion of the, once we get past this phase with the initial, 114 capacity for buses, that there will be further expansion, proposed expansion for the facility up to 250 buses, is that correct?
Mr. Duell, there we believe that there are sufficient funds from the sale of the property, which is still pending and still in litigation, that once resolved, there would be ample funds to build a facility for the replacement of Southeast, which would be 114 bus garage. The facility, the property allows for, and the design is such that it would allow for the expansion up to 250 buses, plus a police training center. Neither of those, the expansion of the police training center, is funded at this time.
Okay, but it's also, is it staff's understanding, as it is supposedly my understanding, that once we get to the point of future expansion to up to 250 buses, that this will provide an opportunity for the buses stored at the Wall Street Bus Barn in Old Town Alexandria to be housed at this newly expanded facility?
Well, obviously that would be a board decision, but there certainly would be space and available for that expansion, and we'd have to go through a public process to approve the relocation, but again, the facility would be, the land allows for, and the design would be such to house up to 250 buses, and since Royal houses about 73 buses, there is room, obviously, on the property for that transfer.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Mr. Benjamin?
I was slightly confused in the presentation. There's a $400,000 figure, which was the net, apparently, of what we owed the district and another $168,000 that the district owed us. Are those offsetting numbers, or is the $400,000 the net, including the $168,000?
No, they're separate numbers.
So the district owes us $168,000. We owe them $400,000.
Part of the exchange agreement is an item of $400,000 for future road improvements for roads in the area of this facility.
Okay, and then it read as though we were going to give the district $400,000 and the district was going to give us $168,000. Are those net figures or are they both gross figures? In other words, one will offset the other.
I guess I'll look to the accountants. The $400,000 would come from the project where the $169,000 goes. I don't know if it goes to the general fund.
But it comes back. So
correct.
Without worrying about what pot it goes into.
Right. Those are two separate things. The district will pay us $168, and we will pay them $400.
I understand.
And the $400 comes out of the proceeds of the sale.
Right, it comes out of the project cost, yes.
Okay. Now, just following up on what Mr. Kalpin said, and I think it's an important issue, I assume that all of this was based upon appraisals. Is that a correct or an incorrect assumption?
It is based on appraisals. We're not proposing the actual transfer agreement at this time. We've not worked out all of the details. Again, we're trying to move proactively to try to get to the point of making a sale. The federal government does have to approve the property exchange, and they want to base that on appraisals. The one piece of property that does not have an appraisal is a D.C. appraisal of the D.C. Village property. I understand that that is in progress and hopefully will be resolved soon. And again, we would waiting for that review from a staff standpoint, think that we have a fair exchange, review that with the FTA and with their approval. We're requesting here that the general manager would have approval then to approve the transfer exchange once all those other approvals have been reached.
Did I hear that the numbers that are in here are based on appraisals or are not based on appraisals?
We are based on appraisals, but the one piece of property that does not have, we have an appraisal on DC. On DC Village, the district does not, and we've not agreed on the value of that piece of property.
Would that change any of the numbers that we're approving now, or is that going to give us a new number that you'll come back to us with?
We can come back to you with the actual property exchange agreement if you like. What we were asking for here was approval to have the general manager approve it when it was finalized.
I guess I'm still confused. I thought we were going to approve the whole thing, and you're saying, no, all the pieces aren't here.
No, we were not asking for approval of the property agreement here, because we have not finalized the details. There's a few details remaining, but once it's finalized, we'd like the general manager to be able to finalize the exchange.
So you're asking us to give the general manager the authority to approve under the presumption that all the rest of this information is brought in and negotiated and that it does in fact work properly.
I think we're very close, and the one big issue is the appraisal, appraisal that needs
if that was in this presentation or in the text that went with it, I never caught it, but maybe I just
apologize.
Missed it.
Okay. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it. Do you wish to be recorded?
Yes.
Record Mr. Kaufman is voting nay. The ayes have it. The motion is carried. Item number C is approval of the Largo closeout. Carol O'Keefe, will you please come forward?
Good afternoon. We're here today to ask the board to approve several actions that will allow a closeout of the Lime Track Wharton Systems contract that was in place for the Largo extension. There's specifically four different things that we need the board's approval for. One would be approval to settle the claim that has been in litigation for several years now. And this is a fully reimbursable project. The Department of Transportation for Maryland has participated in the mediation to achieve a settlement of the litigation and has agreed to fund the amount necessary to settle and close out this contract. That's $9.5 million. That would require an amendment to the budget to increase the budget by that amount, and also to allow the general manager to additionally increase the budget by the final amount for the litigation counsel that was engaged to handle litigation. We don't have the final amount, but again, the state of Maryland, through the Department of Transportation, has agreed to fund those final litigation amounts.
So this is fully reimbursable?
It is fully reimbursable.
Thank you
yes.
very much, Ms. O'Keefe. Is there a motion to
move approval?
It's been moved.
Second.
Is there a second? This is a fully reimbursable motion before us. Discussion. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The ayes have it. The motion is approved. We have an information item, but considering the lateness of the hour, do you mind if you just give a very...
Yeah, I won't go through the whole report. I just wanted to mention to the committee that this is a change in the style of the report. We're trying to provide a little bit more robust information. It not only includes operating results, but we're now going to talk about capital projects on a monthly basis. In the back of the report, we're adding information on performance measures, certain reserves like the TIF. In the future, we'll be forecasting TIF balances for you. Janice, if you could just flip through to the kind of first page. Right there. Back up one. I just used this page. Oh, no, one more. Page down. Down the other way. There you go. Stop. That one. The report now is going to have these chapters in it, so we'll have the operating report like we usually do, so we can brief you on ridership and revenue trends like we always have. We're including a capital section. We're about halfway through the Metro Matters program. Some of the major projects are nearing completion. We want to start talking to you about that. We're adding a section on debt because we're nearing the point in Metro Matters where we need to issue bonds. As I mentioned, we're going to start tracking and reporting performance measures. And then there's a pretty robust appendix being added. We've got some new tools for analyzing ridership variances, and I can be going through that with you as the months go by. That's it.
Do you want to say something in summary about the financial condition from July to September?
At the end of the first quarter, we're in pretty good shape. Revenues are tracking entirely on budget. Costs are coming in under budget, so we're to the good on the subsidy line. And every indication we have right now is that that situation will continue through the year.
Right. Are there questions or discussion? Questions or discussion? Hearing none, then we thank you very much for that report. You can see on page 107 the subsequent agendas for this committee. Is there further business to come before the business, the committee, further business? Having no further business, this meeting is adjourned at 12:20 on December the 13th, 2007. We will move immediately into the planning and development. I have the right to planning and development committee without pause.
Yes, without pause.
Without pause.